In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live, and this is the Energemetra 6 podcast, episode 2. Welcome, everybody, and thanks, Mel, for being here.
Thank you.
And my oldest is here to read John Cassizia for this chapter. So we'll be doing chapter 1 of Bright Star starting now. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. Bright Star, Chapter 1.
Never ask for a savior unless you know what you wish to be saved from. The Auguries Collected, Volume 2.
Lashing out abruptly ended the nightmare of entropy and the eternal void. He had caused some sort of cataclysm he was too mentally muddled to comprehend. Darkness dissolved into a sensory assault of a different kind. Fine dust and grit itched on every square inch of his skin. His mouth tasted like charcoal. A distant, totally unfamiliar siren alternately whooped and wailed. And he wasn't weightless any longer. He was falling. A heartbeat later, his body impacted, one arm underneath, awkwardly twisted half over. Sickening pain lanced through his arm and into his side, and he gasped, the air blasting into his lungs. His eyes flew open, and for a moment he couldn't see anything. Then a faint red glow faded into existence above him, beyond the ragged edge of whatever made up of the ceiling, only to disappear just as quickly. The air was cold. Every bit of him was cold. The deluge almost pulled him into unconsciousness again, but he fought the tide, desperate to escape the dreams. Had they been dreams? Over and above the pain in his side, his head felt like it was splitting in half. He moaned and reached up to touch his face and forehead, and his hand came away with a smear of something gritty and wet. He rolled onto his back, careful not to move his arm. Another dose of that pain might drag him down again. Above him, from the same direction as the pulsing red glow, he saw light bobbing about. First on a wall, then the ceiling. Was that a hole in the ceiling and the room above? A voice floated down to him, faintly, from the same direction, and a moment later the light shone down into the room from above, first aiming over his head to sweep the far wall, then slowly tracking down. It illuminated a great jagged hole he must have fallen through.
Voids! What in space?
The light tracked down further to fix on him, blinding him. He threw up an arm to protect his eyes and squinted against the glare. Thankfully, he had enough presence of mind to use his good arm. A moment later, the same voice came again, the twang of its accent as harsh as the stark light he shaded his eyes to escape.
You okay down there?
He coughed, spitting out some of the dust that coated him and every surface around him, then tried his voice. It croaked, but he managed to answer.
Arm. Headache. Point that somewhere else.
All right. Sorry.
The light left him to roam the room once more, and he let his hand drop to his temple, massaging gently as if the physical act could aid in his fruitless effort to pull his scattered thoughts together. After another moment, the voice came back.
I'll have to take a lift, or the stairs if it's not back in yet. Likely gonna fall through if I try to get you from here, mate.
The light disappeared and the footsteps retreated rapidly. He laid his head back again and drifted, allowing his focus to return gradually. In his stillness, the physicality of the grit against his skin, the pain pulsing in his arm, and the still whooping alarm threatened to overwhelm him. An indeterminate time later, probably a few minutes, but he wasn't exactly keeping track, a whooshing sound broke his reverie, and the light was back in his eyes. He groaned and raised a hand, and the light quickly dropped again, accompanied by a nervous laugh.
Ah, sorry, mate. Can you stand?
The figure before him, boy, man, paused awkwardly, then shrugged.
Best not to try, I guess. The six is on his way. Called him, I did.
A few seconds passed, and the speaker cleared his throat nervously.
Name's Kevin. Kevin Redding. What should we call you?
Nate.
The answer came without thought, and he blinked.
Nate.
Yes, that was right. But beyond that, who was he? What had happened to him? The thought was baffling and strangely terrifying. He could remember nothing before his stretched eternity and the darkness inside the crystal. Nothing except terror. Terror and shame? He knew his past was a nightmare, and he wanted to forget it.
Well, Nate, I think I'm going to find you something to cover up with, right? Only got the one light, but power should be back on in a sec.
Kevin turned and trotted off, happy to be doing something. A few more minutes passed with Nate resting his head, slowly recovering himself. His arms still hurt, but the pain was receding, as was his headache. He could almost think clearly by the time Kevin returned with a cheerful,
"Hello! Found your blanket!"
The eager footsteps approached, and something soft dropped across Nate's body. He shuddered. The touch was overwhelming. A million tiny caresses crawled across his skin, rubbing against the grit. He ground his teeth together and shook his head, carefully, rubbing his hand over his face and hair yet again. Kevin dropped down beside him and shone his light upward toward the hole above, illuminating his own face so Nate could see him. He was older than Nate by a few years, but couldn't have been more than 15 or 16. His face was covered in an onslaught of freckles, and his nervousness was uncomfortable to watch. After a moment, though, he visibly gathered his courage and smiled at Nate.
Look, I know it's none of my business. They'll be here soon, though, and I was wondering, what was it like? They said you was floating out there for, well, practically since forever. What did it feel like?
Nate frowned at Kevin for a moment, then opened his mouth to answer, but measured, purposeful footsteps approaching down the corridor interrupted him. A moment later, another person came around the doorway. In the dimness, Nate couldn't make out much of this new figure, but he got the impression of a severe face with dark hair and dark clothing. Then, the man stepped closer and his height became apparent. He towered over the room. Stepping inside, he walked directly beneath the pool of light Kevin was shining on the ceiling. The dark man had an imposing air about him. His craggy, spare face might have been carved from marble, and his eyes took in everything, seemingly with a single glance. Something scaly glittered on his neck, reflecting the light back to Nate like a mirror. Whatever it was, only the edge was visible above the collar of his black, silky robes. The man took in Nate's bedraggled, grit-smeared face poking out from under Kievan's blanket. Then he turned his eyes upward toward the hole in the deck above him. For a long moment, he stared as if it had insulted him, scowling. Then the material around the edge of the hole began to glow, as if it had suddenly become a luminescent organism. Fascinating! The word rasped, giving Nate the strange sense that the man's lungs were somehow far older than his wiry frame could possibly house. Kievan stood abruptly, sucking in a breath.
Right. Well, I should be getting along then, shouldn't I?
He seemed all arms and legs as he tried to stumble for the door before he'd properly risen.
Radink!
The tall stranger's single word stopped Kievan in his tracks, and he barely managed to catch himself on the doorway with one hand.
Did you disturb this?
The dark man jerked his head to indicate the ragged hole above them.
No, sir.
Kievan shook his head. Didn't seem safe. Took the stairs. The dark man nodded thoughtfully, then raised an eyebrow.
Think you can find our guest some real clothing and inform the captain that the room adjoining mine will be occupied?
Oh, I can do that. Kievan nodded jerkily. Again he turned to go, but then Nate spoke, his voice clear. It was like a moment that stretched on and on until I forgot how it began. Kievan turned back to stare at Nate, and he looked Kievan in the eye and nodded once. Kievan blinked as if he'd forgotten he ever asked a question. Then he turned and fled, taking his light with him. A tiny ball of light winked into existence, hovering just above head height, lighting up the dark man's black, finely woven robes.
One would think you were the Telestry's enemy instead of our savior. I would never have imagined your first act in our universe would be this.
He reached up to the crumbling edges of the hole in the deck above and broke off a fragment. After a moment, he crushed it in his fingers, allowing dust to rain down from his hand and join the mess on the floor around Nate. The dark man's lips twisted in thought as he continued, almost absently.
I am Telestic Drake Loredan. I don't suppose you have a name?
Loredan didn't even pause for Nate to answer.
This took a great deal of power. I wonder, are you aware of having done it, or was it subconscious?
He glanced sharply at Nate. Nate shrugged uncomfortably. Then, after a moment of silence, he said,
I sort of panicked. I was confused and in pain, and the explosion...
Loredan barked a laugh.
Scared of Energemetra 6? Hard to blame you when it can reduce advanced composites to shreds in barely a moment.
He fixed his gaze on Nate's face and frowned in concentration. The silence dragged, and Nate cleared his throat uncomfortably.
It's Nate.
He struggled into a sitting position, pulling the blanket up around him without ever dropping Loredan's gaze. Loredan blinked.
Well, Nate, I have been a Telestic for more than a century, Wonder of Wonders, and I have never seen the likes of this before.
He indicated the hole.
Have you any notion how you did it?
Nate shrugged again.
I had a dream. I was being attacked.
A dream.
Loredan stroked his short beard.
And because of your dream, you lashed out?
He grabbed the edge of the hole and pulled sharply, breaking off a much larger piece. Then he shook his head slowly, running his fingers along the edge of the chunk, which flaked to powder where his finger touched it.
Nate, this space vessel is called Ocarist. Her decks are composed of advanced composite bonded to the lightest, strongest alloys known to man. Using Energemetra 6, I could melt, blast, or simply punch a hole through the deck, although this level of power expenditure might kill me. but in all my time as a practitioner of the fields, I have never encountered anything that could cause this effect. Ocarist's soul is hardly stronger than this deck, but it's like old wood, rotting away. Loredan stirred the powder in one palm with a fingertip, then shook his head as if he was having trouble processing what he was seeing.
About the time, we should assume at precisely the time that you say you lashed out, there was a rather violent surge of Energemetra 6, specifically of the ionic hexapart. That surge through the body of the vessel. Two ensigns were knocked unconscious, and the electrical systems may never be the same. The ionic surplus overcharged the safeties on both aft reactors. We are still dead in space. It was all I could do to damp it enough to avoid completely frying our computer systems. I dare say the situation has been brought mostly under control by now. But as you can see, the lights are no longer functional.
He indicated a spot on the ceiling of the room above.
I assume the ionic blast was severe enough to permanently damage the traces, probably for several dozen meters in all directions.
Loredan paused for a moment, frowning in thought, then he added,
You should have some sort of entropic shock. Countervailing your enthusiasm certainly cost me a few new white hairs, and I was neither confused nor out of control.
He cocked his head.
Have you felt any weakness, any pain?
Again, he didn't stop for Nate to answer, but instead just shook his head.
At a guess, the assumed entropy from the power dump was externalized? Is that even possible?
Loredan blinked down at Nate, as if he were examining some strange puzzle to be solved. Nate frowned back at him for a moment. Talking with Loredan made him feel more like a piece of machinery than a living being. Nate shook his head slowly.
What's a telestic?
Loredan barked another laugh, this time infected with genuine humor.
Voids, boy! You really don't know!
Nate shook his head again, and Loredan snorted. His snort was echoed by another from just outside the door. This one, female. A moment later, a girl strode through the doorway. She couldn't have been much older than Nate, 13 or 14. She was slim, with auburn hair and an intelligent face. She was pretty and graceful enough to draw Nate's eye, even had she been in a crowd. A boy of about the same age followed right on her heels, sharing her hair color and enough of her features that Nate could tell they were related. While her eyes were a bright blue, his were a gentle green. Or were they? Their color seemed to shift in what little light Loredan's tiny ball provided. Their clothing almost seemed designed to contrast with Loredan's. They wore white gis, loose trousers and matching white shirts, secured with cloth belts around their waists. The contrast in clothing only made the glittering, scaly patterns that graced their necks even more obvious. In their cases, the patterns were more apparent than Loredan's, because where the collar of his robes hid most of his neck, their gis were cut low enough for Nate to see that it swirled onto their shoulders as well. And he got a glimpse of it under the boy's sleeve, suggesting it might extend all the way down their arms. The girl eyed Nate for a moment, then turned a cool gaze on Loredan.
Did you even check to see if he hurt himself?
She turned to Nate and raised her eyebrows. Nate half smiled at her.
Hurt my arm when I fell. Seems better now.
He shrugged. The girl turned to the boy who stood at her right elbow and raised an eyebrow expectantly.
John?
John nodded and stepped forward, reaching out for Nate, who tentatively raised his injured arm. John gently grasped his wrist with one hand, running the other over Nate's arm. Immediately, Nate saw a green glow writhing up and down his arm, sinking into the flesh, then roiling back out, as if released from his pores, only to sink back in again as John's hand moved. John frowned in concentration, and wherever the green light touched, Nate felt his body tingle and itch. When he reached the spot where Nate had hurt himself,
John paused momentarily, biting his lip, then shrugged. A moment later, the glow retreated, and John shook his head.
It looks to me like you broke it, but from what I see, it could have been weeks or months ago, not minutes. It's already fully healed.
Rachel shot her brother a questioning look, but he shook his head.
Not my doing.
The girl nodded, then stepped forward to hold out a hand to Nate, who took it with a smile.
I'm Rachel Cassisia. This is my brother, John.
John nodded and glanced at Loredan, who had moved further along the edge of the hole in the deck above and was staring up at its ragged edge. He looked vaguely annoyed, as if his train of thought had been interrupted. Nate quirked a half-smile for John, nodding his thanks. John nodded back, but didn't say anything further. Rachel patted her brother on the shoulder.
He's got away with Anima.
She paused and smiled, but Nate must have looked confused, because after a moment she asked,
You know about the six parts at least.
Nate just looked at her without speaking, and Loredan broke in, sounding impatient.
Energemetra 6 is the energy field that underlies everything and enables the natural world to exist. It is composed of six parts, Nephilic, Pyrrhic, Geotic, Anima, Aqueous, and Ionic. It's what built the universe. It's the energy that allowed you to float out here since the beginning of time. How do you not know this?
Nate looked at Loredan incredulously. Everything was coming at him so fast he could hardly take it in. He barely knew his own name, much less anything about the strange power John had used on his arm. Nate had no idea how to answer, but he didn't have to. Rachel interrupted Nate's thoughts, eyeing Loredan doubtfully.
The beginning of time? How could you know that?
Loredan scowled. The Energemetra 6 integrated in that crystal showed no sign of entropic entanglement. What else could that mean?
Rachel shrugged, and one corner of her mouth turned up in a mocking grin.
Neither did ours. We may not have been there since the beginning of time, but 1,000 years was long enough to get awfully bored of looking at unentropic E6. You found out the hard way you couldn't touch the stuff. I remember.
Loredan's scowl deepened.
Where did he come from, then? Did he just magically appear in the void as we came into sensor range?
Rachel blinked and paused for a moment, then grinned again.
Did you ask him?
Loredan looked shocked, and a flash of anger crossed his face, so fast it might have been imaginary, before his features smoothed again and he turned back to Nate, ignoring Rachel's question to lecture Nate as if he were a recalcitrant student.
Every Telestic has an affinity with the hexaparts of Energemetra 6. This determines how he interacts with the fields, as well as allowing him to manipulate that hexapart directly. Each of the six parts of Energemetra 6 manifests in the world in a different form. Nephilic, Pyrrhic, and Geotic Energemetra 6 are linked with darkness. Ionic, Aqueous, and Anima are aligned with the light. Some believe that matter is Energemetra 6 manifesting directly in the physical world. Others treat it as an energy source that simply grows around matter. No definite conclusions on that subject have ever been reached.
Rachel frowned doubtfully and looked as if she might speak again, but didn't. After a moment, Nate turned to John and Rachel and asked thoughtfully,
You said you were trapped in a crystal as well. How many of us are there? Does this happen often?
John and Rachel traded wry smiles. Loredan snorted.
As far as we knew, these two were the only ones who had ever been trapped in such a manner. Initiates of the Telestry made regular pilgrimages to visit their tomb. This trip was to be exactly that before, well, I dare say their release will cause quite a stir upon our return, even atop your own appearance, which will be quite enough excitement all by itself.
Nate nodded.
How did you get out?
Rachel shook her head.
We don't know. It definitely wasn't the first time somebody enclosed our crystal in their cargo hold and pressurized it. Dad even tried to take us out of the abyss a few times. He couldn't even figure out how the crystal was anchored in place, much less move it.
She made a disgusted face, paused for a moment, then shook her head again.
There was a difference in the fields, but...
Her voice trailed off. Loredan shook his head, cutting the discussion short. Energemetra 6 veils its mysteries. His eyes glinted and he stepped toward the door. Now, Nate, we should get you to your room and be on our way. I presume engineering will have completed the repairs by now. Something about Loredan's tone was strange, and he saw John and Rachel exchange another glance. Without waiting for a response, Loredan swept out of the room. And that is the end of chapter one. That concludes our reading for the day, and we'll be back next week with chapter two. Thanks for being here, Mel. Thanks.
Thank you.
Oldest for being here. And we will catch everybody next week. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.